Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. My guest, Ed O'Bannon, had the kind of basketball career most of us can only dream about. National championship at UCLA, college player of the year, TV appearances, NBA draft, lottery pick, lucrative career in Europe.
There was a wizard in the stands and some magic on the floor. Jim Herrick and UCLA can hang a banner in Westwood.
But it's likely O'Bannon's biggest contribution to the sport will wind up being what happened years after his last game. After a chance encounter with a video game that used his likeness to an uncanny degree without his permission or any compensation, O'Bannon became the lead plaintiff in a long-running legal saga against the NCAA. O'Bannon recounts the ups and downs of that case and his career in a new memoir, Court Justice: The Inside Story of My Battle Against the NCAA, which is out now. Ed O'Bannon, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you very much, Ian. Appreciate it.
I know you've told the story a few times before, but can you just take us through the day when you saw yourself in that EA Sports video game?
Yes, absolutely. I was at a friend's house, and he had talked about how his son had been playing. You know, we'd been hanging out. I mean, nothing formal at all. He had talked about how his son had been playing a video game the night before with my national champion team, UCLA's team. And I was interested and wanted to see it, check it out. I hadn't seen myself on a video game in a while. His kid put it in, and it was unbelievable. It was really cool to, you know, not only see myself, but my brother and my teammates and that sort of thing. You know, he had talked about how he had spent $60 on buying this video game, and I didn't get anything for it, you know, not a dime. He kind of joked about it, poked fun at me or whatever. He was also a former D1 player at UNLV, so he was very familiar with how the system worked, and poked fun at me. I just chalked it up as that was part of the system. I mean, unfortunately, even after our eligibility is up, NC2A still has the quote-unquote rights to use our likeness. And I just thought that that was, you know, I thought it was pretty weak, but there was nothing I could do about it. And that's how I initially saw it. A couple weeks later, Sonny Vaccaro gave me a call, great friend of mine and mentor, gave me a call just to say hello. At least that's what I thought. But he had a question, almost a proposition, as far as, look, he was thinking about filing a lawsuit against the NC2A and was looking for, you know, lead plaintiffs and saw, you know, wanted to kind of fill me out. And then I told him, wow, you know, coincidentally, ironically, a couple of weeks ago, prior to this conversation, I had saw my avatar in a video game and, you know, wanted to ask questions about it, but just had nowhere to go. And so that's kind of, we put our heads together, eventually came up with, you know, the lawsuit. Initially, for me, it was to sue the EA Sports. His was the NC2A. That was his idea. And then we just kind of merged and kind of evolved into eventually what we have today.
Just to explain it for listeners who might not have followed the whole case, to summarize the NCAA's argument, they would say, amateurism is at the center of all of college sports, and athletes can't be compensated because that would change the nature of the game. What you were originally arguing for was that players whose likeness is used in video games and other places to promote college sports should be compensated for it. But when you got involved in the lawsuit, what specifically were you hoping would come out of the case?
To raise awareness, initially. That was my biggest thing. Because I knew the system had been in place for years, for decades. And it wasn't just going to change overnight. No matter how long our lawsuit, this particular lawsuit would last, I was told it was going to be at least 10 years. So we're in a marathon. I understand that. But I also understand and understood that rules weren't going to change. My biggest thing was to at least, you know, pull back the curtain and then let the public know how the NC2A has been running their business for decades. You know, there's billions of dollars made and the kids aren't compensated. And the former players in which I initially got into it, I wanted to say, look, this is, you know, we're not even on scholarship. We've moved on with our lives, us as former players, yet they're still using our likeness. That's actually illegal. You know, if someone wants to take your likeness and use it for profit, you know, that's illegal. So I wanted to point that out. And then it eventually evolved into scholarship players, active players being paid. So my initial thing was for former athletes, and then it eventually evolved into, you know, players, current players getting paid, among other things.
One thing that really stuck out to me in the book is that you're very honest about what a great time you had at UCLA. It's not as if you're a bitter former college athlete who didn't enjoy the experience, but you make the point that, you know, you were 18 years old. A lot of players are naive about how the world works at that time, and they don't realize ways that they may have been taken advantage of until years later. So when did you start to reevaluate the experience you did have at UCLA?
Great question. I think over time, what happens is, you know, while you're in it, you know, when you're coming out of high school, you're excited about signing a letter of intent. Don't even care what the wording is. I just want to sign. Look, if I have to, if it's going to help me play basketball, I'm going to sign this letter. And that's the first thing that goes wrong, because the wording in it binds you for life to the NC2A. And so after a while, you start realizing it once you leave. I think my biggest thing, I started to realize it, later on when you move on with your life, and the connections that you had when you were in college, have, you know, fizzled, has, you know, gone away like the wind, because you're no longer, a part of the university. You're no longer bringing in money to the university. Or the people involved. And so, you know, relationships fizzle. That's life. I get it. But those aren't the words that you're heard, that are told, you know, that you're given when you're being recruited, you know. And so you start to realize that, and that's fine. That's the system, you know, you move on. But the frustrating part is when, again, your likeness is all of a sudden brought back, and you find out that they're still making money off of you. And it's like, wait a minute, you know, I'm gone, but you're still using my likeness, you know, for profit. That's the frustrating part. So, you know, as you get older, life hits you. You grow up, you realize certain things, you educate yourself on certain things. You know, in my case, you want to make a change if you feel like there's a social injustice involved.
We're talking with Ed O'Bannon about his new book, Court Justice, The Inside Story of My Battle Against the NCAA. I want to ask you about the role that you believe race plays in the system as it's currently set up. The major money-making sports are Division I men's basketball and football, which are largely played by, you know, black athletes like you. So how do you think race influences the position that the NCAA has taken in terms of athlete compensation and this whole idea of amateurism?
Well, there's an irony that the money-making sports in college athletics are football and basketball. And both sports, the majority of the athletes are black athletes. The rules, are set in place for them to have to go to college or at least spend some time out of high school before they go into the pro ranks, whether it's a year for basketball or three for football. I think that's designed to keep the athlete in school so they can make as much money for not only the school, but the NCAA. And baseball and hockey, you can get drafted out of high school and go pro right away, whether it's in the major leagues of those sports or the minor leagues of those sports. I think that's by design. Those rules have been in place for years. In basketball, it hasn't been in place for as long as the other ones. And what I mean by that is players could come out of high school as recently as, I guess, when LeBron James first came out of high school.
Yeah, like 15 years or so. Yeah, about 2003.
Right. So that rule is pretty recent, you know, in respect to all the others. But nonetheless, that one was changed. So the athlete has to go to school. And I think that's by design. Again, it's been in place for years, but the design, in my opinion, is to make as much money as possible before they get out on their own and make their own money.
Now, one thing you touch on in the book is the fact that your fight against the NCAA has cost you in terms of chances at TV jobs and coaching. Obviously, you know the sport of basketball. You played in the NBA. You played in Europe. You were one of the great stars of the college game. Are you still interested in getting into coaching or TV if somehow there was a detente here?
You know what? Another good question. I don't know. I hadn't really thought about it, to be honest with you. I've moved on with my life. It'd be pretty hard to get into coaching. I don't know. I don't know if the heart is there. I love the game, and I even coach on the high school level here in town in Vegas. So I enjoy it. I love teaching, but I'm not sure if the opportunity presented itself. I would definitely consider it, both whether it be coaching or color commentating. But for the most part, those opportunities also fizzled away because of this lawsuit, and I knew that that was going to happen. I understand, but it's one of those things that I knew going in, not complaining about it, just recognizing it. If the opportunity presented itself, maybe I would definitely consider it, but who knows?
What kind of advice did you give your kids who followed your footsteps into D1 sports?
To do the best that they can, enjoy their experience. I know I enjoyed mine. I met their mom in college. We had a class together and fell in love and been together ever since. I enjoyed my experience. I've always wanted my kids to enjoy theirs. And that's partially why I kind of kept them separate from this lawsuit. I didn't want them being involved. I wanted them to stay off of my social media account, leave my stuff alone, don't respond to anything, keep your, stay away. Because I want them to, they didn't ask for this lawsuit, and so I wanted them to experience it like any other kid would, enjoy it, not worry about anything except for themselves, get there the best they can and enjoy it, and they're doing that. My oldest one is done with college. My daughter, she's in school, and my youngest one as well as baseball. He's playing college baseball. So they're enjoying their college experience. That's what their mom and I have always wanted for them. And, we couldn't be more happy.
When you finished at UCLA, you were, I think, a semester short of your degree. And eventually, like a dozen years later, you were commuting back and forth to finish it. Why was that important to you?
It was important to me because at the time, I was getting my oldest one to go back to school, and I couldn't tell him to go back to school when I hadn't finished. And I wanted to be an example to him and to, you know, to my kids. And then as well as I promised my mom, it's cliche, but I promised my mom that I would get my degree. This was way back when I was a teenager, when I accepted my a scholarship. I promised her that I would finish. Because she knew my plans were to go to school for 2 years and then come out and go into the NBA. Those were my plans coming out of high school. So I wanted to keep that promise. And I wanted to be a stand-up guy to, you know, my family, to my kids, to, you know, all the people that love and respect me. So, you know, there was, it's a bit cliche, but that's what I wanted to do, fulfill a promise. And, you know, I feel good because I have a degree from UCLA. You know, there's a certain, it's a fine, it's a, one of the greatest institutions in the world. And I finished, I went back and finished, and it was great. It was fun. To drive back and forth. It was therapeutic for me, personally. I enjoyed the drive, the 3.5-4 hour, sometimes 5 hour drive back and forth. I did it every week and finished up. I absolutely loved the experience.
We're speaking right ahead of March Madness, which, I mean, it's a great sporting event. And whatever your thoughts about the structure of NCAA athletics, has your experience in court going against the NCAA hampered your ability to enjoy that sporting event?
Oh, heck no. Heck no. I love March Madness. I love watching the competitiveness. I love, you know, filling out the bracket. I love at my dealership, you know, everyone, we have this tournament and, you know, the bracket, the pools and the, you know, I get into it. I enjoy, we come up with some pretty good excuses on getting out of work and going watching the games and that sort of thing. It's, you know, it's the funnest time of the year. I absolutely love it.
Okay, so the last question is, your book finishes with a list of 12 prescriptions that you have for what you'd like to see change in the NCAA. And you don't have to go through all of them, but if you had the chance to start from scratch tomorrow and remake the way college athletics works, what would you like to see?
I would like the N2A to empower the college athlete, you know, to market themselves, to grow their brand. If the kids were able to, you know, benefit monetarily off of their own likeness, and even it can, even if college, if the athletes were to get paid, you know, a stipend, it should go to everyone. It should go to men's and women's, all sports. I'd like to see that. I would like health benefits for the athletes, even when they leave, you know, because a lot of them are going to have injuries while they're in school playing. And then they're going to leave. Those injuries are going to be with them. I had my knee replaced last year. So the injuries stay with you. The health benefits should be long, you know, lifelong as well. I don't know. Make the rules understandable for the kids when they come in and their families. Let them know what they're actually getting into.
Knowing what you know now, would you do it again?
The lawsuit?
I guess the lawsuit and the college basketball career in the first place.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I loved my college experience. I have lifelong friends from college. You know, it was an absolute blast. So, yes, I would do it again. I don't know that there's a whole lot that I would change, maybe. No, there isn't anything I would change. It was, you know, it was fun. And fast forward, you know, years, I would also do this lawsuit, again, if given an opportunity. be a part of it, because, you know, it was something that needed to happen. And the NC2A is not going to change their rules by themselves. Otherwise, they would have done it a long time ago, you know, years ago, decades ago. So, no, I have no regrets. I've enjoyed my, you know, my college experience. I've enjoyed afterwards, my after college experience, you know, going into different professions. No regrets whatsoever.
We've been speaking with Ed O'Bannon. He's the author of a new memoir called Court Justice, The Inside Story of My Battle Against the NCAA. Ed, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show, and I just want to say what you did took a lot of guts. So thanks for all the time.
Wow, thank you, Ian. Appreciate you. Thank you for having me on your show.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.